Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Now, the Crow has a bad reputation. They are seen as even being a bit sinister. But Dr. Kevin McGowan, who's been studying them for 30 years, has a different view. He says they are highly intelligent and even have strong family values. Kevin, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
What kind of a family life does your average crow have?
Well, the crow that I study is a little bit different than what you have in Ireland. It's a different species. And my crow has an extended family. There's a pair, male and a female, that are together basically for the rest of their lives once they get together. They raise offspring, and those offspring actually stay with their parents for several years and help them raise more offspring. That family unit has a territory that is the family space, but they live in a neighborhood. They have a good neighborhood watch that if something like an owl or a hawk comes into the neighborhood, they all gather to try to drive it away.
So how big would your average crow community be then?
Well, the family size can range up to 15. That's a mom and dad with 13 kids from up to 6 different years. But that's a large family. Typically, the family size around here is about 3 or 4, and they probably know it within their neighborhood. They know as individuals probably about 10 to 20 other families, something like that. But they also go off away from the territory and join in clusters of crows in the fields, foraging in the fields or at dumps and things like that. And those, they may or may not know any of those crows individually.
And when you say they're territorial, do they tend to stay in the same areas for their lifetimes?
Once a crow has established the territory, they very rarely leave it. I mean, to go someplace else for another territory. It's very much like you, right? Like you and me, is that the family has a space that theirs, the crows that I work on, all year round. And if another crow comes in, they're not allowed. Like if you came into, walked out into your living room and there was some stranger sleeping on your couch, you'd be really upset.
Yes.
And into the same guy at the store and he dropped something, you might even pick it up for him. And that's the way the crows are, too, is they have that kind of our space, our family space, but they're friendly to everybody else who doesn't intrude on it.
Mm. Their interaction with humans, do you think that's changed over the years in the amount of time that you've been studying them?
Absolutely. I have data on that, actually. Basically, we have changed our behavior towards the crow. And the crow has responded in kind. That is, here in the United States, people used to just take pot shots at crows, and you couldn't get within a mile of them because they were considered varmints, and people just shot them. They eventually got protection, and you can still hunt them, but a hunting regulation is actually a protection for an animal because it limits the amount that people can shoot them. And the crows came into town as a consequence of people stopping shooting at them. And now that they're in town, they're watching people as potential sources of food instead of potential threats.
Mm.
And we actually, in my research group and me personally, I have a few families that I feed peanuts to as I'm driving by, and they'll chase my car down the street to get me to stop to give them peanuts.
Yeah, now when you say crows look at us as potential sources of food, you mean that we'll give them food rather than they'll eat us?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's probably important to be clear about that.
One of the reasons people think of them as bad things was because they used to eat us when we died because, you guys don't have any vultures, so, in the olden times when it was not so easy to deal with dead people, if there was a problem, somebody died, the carrion eaters, namely the raven and crows, were very happy to come over and pick out some eyes and then try to get a meal out of that. So if you died and lay out on the ground, they would eventually eat you, but right now they're mostly interested in whether you're going to drop some chips or peanuts for them.
Yeah. Now, when you say that you know, you personally feed a few families and they'll follow you down the street, is there evidence that they recognize you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There have been some fun work done by John Marslip at the University of Washington using masks that demonstrate that the crows are looking at individual people's faces. And I've known that for 30 years. That was pretty obvious to me right from the get-go, because they used to not like me, and they would mob me even though I didn't know who they were, but they had joined in these neighborhood groups and seen me sometimes. So I decided, everywhere I went, crows would yell at me, and I decided I would make you a little paranoid after a while. And I decided I wanted to have some crows that liked me, so I started feeding them peanuts. And the ones that that own the parking lot here at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, they know my car. They actually will approach my car. One of them caught up with my car while I was driving 50 miles an hour down the highway right beside here, and with amongst 100 other cars. They know my car. They know my face. They apparently know my walk or something like that, because I have them come from behind and come up and land in the tree in front of me waiting for me to give them peanuts.
That's quite extraordinary.
It is. It's really amazing. And they know me out of context, that I've been approached by a crow 10 miles away from where we always interact. And I was on a highway that gets several thousand cars a day, and within 2 minutes of me stopping to look at this flock of crows, this one that from 10 miles away knew my car, came over and checked it out and begged for peanuts.
If you died though on the street, Kevin, and your body was left there, would the crows go, well, we're not going to eat him because we know him?
I don't think that would slow them down. If they could, there was open flesh to eat, I think they'd probably just eat me. And hey, you know, in some ways that's honoring, you know, your friendship, right? Is to eat your friend, isn't it? That's
okay.
From Stranger in a Strange Land. Have you read that book?
Tony, one of our listeners who's in Dublin now, but he says, could you ask, is it unusual for tens of thousands of them to fill the evening sky? I saw this phenomenon in the Bucharest sky last Sunday. They were black, so I assumed they were crows, which kind of feeds into something I also wanted to ask you. Do people often see a black bird and assume it's a crow, but it's not?
Well, let me answer the first one first.
Yeah,
crows there are about 50 species of things called ravens and crows in the world, and almost all of them congregate in the non-breeding season in roosts to sleep together. And they can be from, you know, just a few tens of birds up to, the largest American crow roost was estimated at 2 million crows coming together in one spot.
Wow.
So that's very common all across the world to see especially in the fall, in the Northern Hemisphere, large congregations of crows coming together to sleep together.
And being mistaken for other birds?
It depends on people's ability to recognize birds. But sure, we have a few things here. We have grackles, which are a blackbird, long, sleek, and kind of iridescent, smaller, half the size of a crow. But some people think that they're crows. Crows are pretty distinctive. And they are one of those birds that if somebody's going to know 10 species of birds, crow's going to be in it. And so that, for me, makes it kind of fun when I give public talks, because I get a large audience because people know them. And then it's like, okay, I have questions about crows. And so the average person actually does think a little bit about crows. And I've found that when I give a lecture, I give a one-hour lecture or 45-minute to a one-hour lecture, and very often I answer questions for an hour because everybody seems to know what a crow is, and they usually either love them or hate them, but they have questions about it. And I always ask in my talks, I always say, see a show of hands, how many people here love crows? And then I say, how many people here hate crows? And there's always a few honest people in the room that hold up their hand for that question too.
This is another listener sent in this comment. In 1932 in Fermoy, County Cork, a five-day war broke out between the crows and the sparrows over territory. On the initial day of the war, crow numbers were estimated to be about 500. This number held steady for 4 days of the war. On the fifth day, crow numbers reached 2,500. The starlings retreated, leaving the crows in possession of the nesting site. Over the following weeks, crow numbers returned to the original 500.
I've got no explanation for that, but if there's some sort of a ruckus, the crows will come from far away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of being a crow is if there's like something bad, and everybody comes to check it out. If there's nobody around, the crows will still make the same noise. But if there's a crow within earshot, everybody comes to see what's going on and to lend a hand. They seem to like to do group arguments. They're very into insulting the ancestors of hawks and owls, and me too. I climb to their nests to band the young, and yeah, I've been called some bad names by crows a lot.
Do they have? I mean, I read that they have something that one could almost call it a funeral.
Well, there is a thing called a crow funeral. It's not really a funeral, but they're very interested in other dead crows. And so if the crows see a dead crow, they will actually come over and make that anti-predator call as they fly over it and look down at it. And they come out and check what's going on. And the explanation for this is that they're not so much interested in paying their respects to that dead crow, but they want to see what happened. And they may want to know who it was. Certainly, if it was in their own territory or in their own neighborhood, they'd know. At these public spaces, maybe not. But they can also see that the bird is dead, see that it's ripped open, and that means that there's something that can eat a crow in the neighborhood and that everybody should be wary. And so they're getting some information about local predators when they do that. But, yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. And where I work, I do a lot of censusing out at the Cornell Compost Facility. Cornell University is a leader in many fields, including compost, apparently. And they throw out a lot of all the wasted dorm food goes there. And so I go there because there are lots of crows. This is one of these public spaces where crows from all over the place can come and show up. And I try to see who's around by going there. But I always know when there's a dead crow or another large bird that's dead in the area, because the birds, as they fly into to the food site, will circle and make this anti-predator noise. And sure enough, you know, I go over and there's a dead bird. Sometimes it's a gull or a pigeon. But again, they're interested in telling everybody, so there's a dead bird here. Everybody should be on their guard.
Kevin, that's all fascinating. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Kevin McGowan there from the Bird Biology Lab at Cornell Lab of Ornithology. We're going to take a break after that, our farming slot.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.